Hey everyone, Marcus Parks here to give you an update on the Sausage Fest coming up on October 5th. The whole show is going to start upstairs at the Creek in the Cave at 1093 Jackson Avenue in Long Island City, Queens at 5 p.m. And that's going to go until 10 p.m. That's 5 hours of stand-up featuring your favorite Cave Comedy Radio performers. And at the same time, downstairs, we're going to be having live podcasts from 6 p.m. until 10 p.m. And then the Cowmen, the band that you're listening to in the background, and features myself and Holden McNeely of the Roundtable of Gentlemen, is going to be playing a set at 10 p.m. So, hey, see you there, puppet.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
You know what I've discovered really riles people up
to a frothy anger?
Yeah.
Is singing the song Friday by Rebecca Black about any other day of the week and just throwing stuff in there.
Like it's, you know, Tuesday?
Tuesday, feeling sad on Tuesday. It's Tuesday day, and nobody cares the weekend's long away. Tuesday.
Shut up! Good God, you weren't lying. That's unbelievably aggravating.
It's Wednesday.
No, all right, welcome to the show, everyone. No,
Wednesday.
We're not starting off like
it's
that.
It's too late, and so we gotta put out Thursday.
Hollywood has changed you, Henry Zebrowski, and none of us are happy about it. Welcome
to
the
show. I'm pretty pleased with it.
Well, Marcus is happy. Good. Are you happy now, Henry? You made Marcus happy, which means you did something wrong.
Hi, everybody. Name's Rebecca Black. Remember me? Nobody else does. No. I certainly don't.
Rebecca, you seem to age. You do not age gracefully, huh?
I gotta tell you, you know what day of the week I don't like anymore? Fucking Friday.
Friday, right. Because yeah. The song that everyone made fun of you for.
Yeah. Sick of fucking Fridays, huh?
Got it.
Yeah, well, I'll see you guys. I'm betting on a bunch of dogs fighting each other over a piece of chicken.
All right, well, I'm happy your life is going better than most of ours.
I hope the black one wins.
Well, probably will. All right, that's Marcus. I'm Ben. We're joined by Rebecca Black.
Hey, it's me, Hollywood Henry Zebrowski.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's just get into it.
Yeah.
Part two, Chikatilo, Mother Russia. Things are about to get even more disgusting than you ever imagined they could.
The more I read about him, too. You know, the thing about this guy, again, he gets less charm in every sentence I read about him.
Yep. He starts off at kind of a high note, you know, just an abused child who wanted to do well for his mother and for his country. And now...
Also, Ragnar posted a really interesting post about, like, comparing Andre Chikatilo to the entire Russian idea, and it's very interesting too, because as you see, when he gets caught, it's in the year 1991 and he gets sentenced. It's like literally his whole life moves with the broken dream of Russia and the falling of that of the USSR. It's really interesting.
It's very much.
And I want to thank Sophie Godso for that beautiful song.
Oh yeah,
on the page. But I don't know why everyone thinks I'm always crying.
Well, you, let's just say you are a giant sack of tears. I'm not saying
I have never. I don't cry. I'm of German descent. When my dad's dad died, you know what he said to me?
What?
He said, "Hey Ben, your grandfather's dead. I cried a little this morning." That's it. And I said, "Okay."
That's nice. But didn't he also say we have to burn the papers and hide his medals from the Führer himself?
Well,
the time period's over. I can say what I want. Anything I want about your heritage.
You're on fire, Henry.
Well, let's get back into Andre Chikatilo by listening to a fictionalized account of Chikatilo's life. Wow. This is a clip from a movie that starred Malcolm McDowell back
now, this is Chikatilo's version of The Game.
Right? This is from a movie called Ivalenko.
So insert your Juggalo ICP jokes there.
First time you've seen a real man. Scared. But you like it too, don't you? Be honest.
He's talking to a little girl.
He's got his pants down.
You can touch him if you want.
Him?
Yeah, give me your hand. No.
Oh, she doesn't want to.
He wants to be your friend.
He
told me that he likes you. He's dying to show you what happens to him when you touch him.
Oh my God.
He gets big.
He doesn't, though.
And if you treat him right, you're honest with him, he can do anything. There's nothing he can't do.
What? Even fly?
Even fly. And if you're very brave, he'll let you fly with him.
Does that mean he can talk too?
Oh, no, 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 no.
No, 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 no. Now you're being stupid.
He doesn't trust anyone.
Not even me?
No. No, no. Not you, of course.
All right, then. Make him talk.
All right.
Make him talk.
Give him a chance to get big.
No, you're lying. He can't talk. He can't because he's dead.
All right. Well, that was the most disturbing audio we've ever played on this show, and I think we've had some 911 calls where a woman dies.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, it can fly. Yeah. His penis can fly.
Oh, yeah, it can fly.
God, it was a.
Both have been surprised if he was like, "Can you make him talk?" And then it was like, "Hey, little girl, hey, can I have some problem standing up? If you know what I'm talking about, maybe give me a chair or something." Anyways, I'm gonna kill you.
I feel like the mouse in that movie Dumbo spoke about Dumbo the same way. Yeah, he can fly. Yeah.
It also magical. Felt sort of like a Cinderella vibe. I was waiting for it to turn into like, you know, or like the Pottsbury clock fat man.
Right.
From Beauty and Beast.
So that's actually a charmed version of Chikatilo.
That's a much charmed version. Yeah. Right. And that, you know, of course, and that was at the beginning of his career, which we covered last week. That was more of the molesting school children part of his career. But we have moved past that. We have now moved to the year 1982, in which at this point he has killed 8 people. Right. And
I want a new dog when it won't miss it.
So he's
1982,
out.
Man. The airwaves were full of Huey Lewis and the news, but Russia didn't get it. They just got the solemn chimes of a bell letting everyone know that the bread ran out.
Oh, I love that chime. So he's on to his White Album. He started to take some drugs, and he's getting a little bit more wild by the moment, huh?
Well, let's talk about the victim selection that he had, how he chose his victims. Because his victims were very wide and varied as far as who they were, what class they came from. I mean, because, you know, you couldn't really make a connection between a 44-year-old alcoholic prostitute and the 11-year-old stamp collector. Like, there wasn't a whole lot.
Unless you're talking about the fans of Jennifer Lawrence. That's everybody.
And
that's
true. He didn't care. It's absolutely everybody. Everyone loves her.
Can we talk about Jennifer Lawrence for a second? Holy Lord. She is one. That is a beautiful woman.
So it didn't matter whether it was an older woman, a little boy. It didn't matter at all who it was. All he wanted to hear was screams. All he wanted to see was blood. He never searched out specifically a woman or a boy. All of his victims, it was all at first opportunity. He would just pick people until finally one of them went off with him to eventually be brutally murdered.
Right.
Because that's what they said, too, is that, like, literally any sign of resistance, he would let it go.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't want any... Because the idea was that, I mean, he couldn't get his pee-pee all hard, so he couldn't... Anything that demasculated him, he couldn't deal.
Yeah.
So if we did, let's just say, look at some of the nude pictures of Jennifer Lawrence that were released, we'd be like, we were aroused, and then be like, what do you like, Chikatilo? And he'd be like, love that movie Hostel. I've been jacking off to that movie Hostel, like, nonstop.
And he killed...
I just feel like maybe Russia could have used more, like, you know, pumping sounds of screaming into the streets, make it look like a Halloween Horror Nights, and then he would have been fine. Like, he would have just been hard all the time, and he would have just maybe have been president.
I think it would be, creepier and worse if he got off to the sounds of laughter. You know?
Yeah.
That's more disgusting.
Really?
Nah, not really.
He killed no heterosexual men whatsoever, as far as men goes, because, first of all, men hated him. He could sweet talk women. He could sweet talk children because you remember he didn't start killing until he was in his 40s. So he had kind of a grandfatherly look about him. And the other reason why he was able to lure children and women away is because in Soviet Russia, standing in line was a fact of life.
Right.
You stood in line every single day. And of course, the buses were terrible. And he picked up most of his victims at railway and bus stations. So they'd be in line together. They'd start talking. They'd form a sense of camaraderie. And then say, you know what, why don't we go for a walk? The women, he would pretty much just say, like, okay, let's go relax.
So that goes in Russia, you'd be like, are you miserable? And you'd be like, yeah, I'm miserable. Are you miserable? I am too. We have so much in common.
Yeah.
Let's go to the woods.
You got me waiting for a bus for 45 minutes. I'd much rather get my organs cut off and my nipples shot off by some fucking grandfather killer.
To some degree, he was doing them a favor. And that's how bad Russia was. He was only 40, and everyone's like, grandpa.
And of course, he was a sadist, a complete and total sadist. And in hardcore sadists, it does make sense for them to move from heterosexual objects to homosexual objects and eventually to homosexual pedophilia. Because in their mind, that is the escalation of depravity.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because they see homosexuals as depraved, not something that's normal, but it's something that is the next step in their sexual spiral.
Showed, it had nothing to do with his direct sexuality.
No.
It was all about just the domination and the control, which is actually very interesting because, to be honest, I don't know many killers, like, tell me if I'm wrong, that really switched back and forth between, like, men and women. Most of them do one or the other.
Well, Ramirez was just a slash-and-go kind of guy.
Yeah.
Well, he would kill the husband in order to get to the woman. Like, that was, his objective was the woman. The same thing with, like, you know, and John Wayne Gacy was all about little boys because it was hiding his sexuality. I think that's what makes Chikatilo specifically so fucked up and dangerous, is the fact that he was just about the violence.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with him. It's got nothing to do with the sex at all.
No. And speaking of the violence, let's get into what he actually did to the victims. He ripped open their stomachs. He sliced off their sexual organs in most cases. He would slice off penises, testicles, and nipples, and then he would chew on them. He would never eat them. He'd never swallow them.
He actually made a big deal in his confession when he was saying, he was like, I do not eat. I'm not a cannibal. I just like to chew on them.
Yeah, he said his main obsession was the uterus.
Yeah, yeah.
Main obsession was the uterus, and he said, I did not want to bite them so much as chew them. They were beautiful and elastic.
They got
to
get Wrigley's over there. You got to get some good spearmint gum. Save some lives.
It's a problem with the gum shortage, because also it's him following around like some little girl. He's just like, I happen to like the ones that taste like watermelon.
Oh, yeah, he's looking for that apple strawberry combination. It's difficult to find in a human being.
Yeah, because there's not as much of a Wrigley's as they're more of a gusher.
Right, right. Yeah, that good clean feeling that you get from orbits or eating someone's liver.
Another thing that he would do to all of his, or almost all of his victims, is that he would cut out their eyes. That he would at the very least stab the eyes, either around the eyes or specifically in the eyes, or cut them out completely, because it was said, there was a superstition, that a dead person's last images were burned on their retinas. And
right.
He believed that his image was burned on their retinas. And who knows if that was, you know, some crazy thing that he thought maybe he'd get caught through some Soviet super magic, or
right, yeah,
or if he just was superstitious about it.
I think he was real dumb.
Is that just also how often brutal murder happens in Russia that they like
right.
They had to make this rule to stop it, of just being like, you know, it's like, you got to stop murdering because the eye, it takes pictures of your face, so just, you know, make sure to not do that, huh?
I feel like you put
guys,
the...
we need to cut it down because we could literally cannot keep together a children's choir. They keep getting murdered so hard.
Right. That's what's so sad.
Well, it was actually the eyes that was able... that's what made investigators notice that this guy wasn't just murdering in Rostov. That he was murdering all around the... I guess it would be the Western Soviet Union.
Yeah.
The eyes is what links it all together.
Did he take the eyes out before he murdered him, or was it a post-mortem thing?
Well, that's the big thing about Chikatilo, is that as he killed more and more, his killing procedures became more and more surgical. And in fact, he got so good at killing that he was able to stab, that he knew if he stabbed someone at a certain place and at a certain angle, he knew where the blood would spurt, and he knew how to dodge it. so he wouldn't get as bloody during his kills.
Like Neo from The Matrix?
Yes.
He's just bending over backwards?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And he knew how to keep them alive for as long as possible, to prolong the suffering for as long as possible.
So he did. So that's very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like kind of like what the guidance counselor tells you. It's just being like, if you had $1 million... what would you want to do with your life?
Right.
You know what I mean? And Chikatilo just did that. He just did it. He took the bull by the horns and he carpe diem'd his way into killing all these little girls.
You don't need to go to the university to become a doctor. No, you don't. And I want to thank you, Henry, for putting that Bare Naked Ladies song in my head, if I had $1 million. But now it's about Chikatilo stabbing somebody's eyes out.
Chikatilo.
If I had $1 million, I'd take a child into the woods and murder them. Okay. You can do that for free, you know? Oh, all right.
Seriously? Oh, you mean, wait, seriously?
Yeah, dude, you can just go do that whatever you want.
Like today?
Yeah, dude, whatever. You don't even need it.
So I hate to cut lunch short, but I'm going to go follow my dreams.
I think we made him a murderer today.
So as far as identifying the bodies goes, because this, the manhunt, oh, we're going to get into the manhunt that lasted 12 years, extremely inept. Very, very, the Russians were very, very bad at what they did.
Yeah, they just wrangled up any slowpoke in the town.
Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Infuriating.
The other problem is it was the big nets that they would just kind of just drag along the streets hoping to catch men in them.
But their job was definitely made more difficult, especially in the early days, because in the early days, most of Chikatilo's victims were tramps, prostitutes, people that had not, they didn't have a propiska.
Right.
A propiska, that's a formal registration of residence. So if someone didn't have that, if they were homeless or just kind of slept around, they were, you know, pretty much a stray dog. No one cared about them at all. So when they found these bodies, you know, of course, when you investigate a murder, the first thing you do is identify the body and look around at what they did before they were murdered. But with Andrei Chikatilo, many times this was impossible.
Because there was just no more evidence of what the person looked like.
Yeah, well, there was no more evidence of what they looked like, and there was no identification on the people whatsoever. So
he didn't write their names on their backs.
Did not
keep tabs.
he did not. And of course, like, he spent all of his time in railway stations, and he, much like Gary Ridgway, he started to see himself as an exterminator of humankind.
At some point, if you work in a railway station and you just see the same person there every single day, ask him where he's going.
Yeah.
And where are you going, buddy? It just seems like you should be getting a ticket or something.
Right. You've been here. You've been in the same spot for a month and a half. It's a train station.
I'm
looking
at the human rats because I want to turn them into dog food.
That's fine. All right.
Whatever you want to do, buddy, but just get on the train. You know?
Do it on the train.
Yeah, and people did notice him throughout the years.
Right.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
Because, but again, the problem is, it's, again, nobody cares about these prostitutes. And that's where this amalgamation of sexual tension, inadequacy, a sense of superiority is what made him the fucking perfect killer. Because he just, because all you have to do is, it's so fucked up, but it's like lower your standards and like get to a point of just being like, I'm going to kill this strata of human being that no one looks for. And eventually you become like, because it probably started as just because they were the easiest ones. They would come with him. They would go out into the forest with him. But then he began to despise them for that.
Yeah, I don't even think it's lowering. Like, I don't think it's lowering your standards. I think he's raising his ego and he's like, I'm God of these people. And again, everyone likes to feel as if they're doing good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody does. Even the most sick people, he thinks that he is eradicating a plague.
Yeah. He said they followed me like dogs.
The guys who invented Twinkies were just trying to make a funner bread.
And how many people have they killed? Thousands.
Well, by December of 82, he completely... This is another thing that makes Chikatilo special, or maybe just makes the Soviet Union fucked up. In December of 82, he started killing people of higher... So he started killing children. He killed this girl, Olga Stolmachinok. He picked her up at a bus stop, took her to the woods, and murdered her. They didn't find her body for 4 months, and then only by chance. But in the interval, the police received a message. It was addressed to parents of missing child. It read,
"Greetings, parents. Don't get upset. She is not the first and not the last. Before New Year, we need another 10. If you want to find her, then search among the leaves on the Vodorovsky Petoskovsky."
And it was signed.
Sadist. The Black Cat.
The Black Cat. That's as badass as you can get. The Black Cat. Sounds like you're about...
Never trust a black cat or I cross your path. Oh, I swipe at your pant leg with my claws.
I kill the girl and I chew on the uterus.
Oh, black cat having fun.
All right. You know, I like everything except for black cat. Maybe we can call you the ravenous beaver. How does that sound? Black cat.
The corn on the cob killer.
Oh, that's a great one.
Him just biting all around the sides of their torsos.
Unfortunately, the letter was a hoax, but, you know, I couldn't pass that up.
No.
Absolutely.
But it is a part of the story because that letter was a part of the investigation for many, many years.
And it's sort of similar to the Zodiac, you know, these people who are, like, faking it. Yeah. He's a real celeb now.
Yeah,
he didn't
like, he didn't even know about the letter until they arrested him because it was almost like the Zodiac. Like, it was this weird piece of the puzzle that no one could really figure out.
Because crimes were happening everywhere.
Yeah.
It was all over Russia, like all the whole Rostov area. They had a wide area of who could be doing it because there was a bunch of different clues, especially because it seemed like he was becoming a surgeon, so they started thinking he was a doctor. And then they started thinking maybe he was a cop because he knew how the cops were operating. And so it could have been everything.
Anyway, that's how bad Russia was. They legitimately thought it could be a doctor.
how good was a slaughterhouse worker.
Right.
But still, doctor could be.
It's not the Black Dahlia murders, for Christ's sake. I'm sure these murders weren't that unbelievably artistic or scalpel-like.
And the poor sadist black cat was just like a guy named Javar wearing like a cat. Like costume hat, like in an old shack. Like,
no one will believe that I am a cat. How I wish that I could just jump from tree branch to tree branch.
Black cat is terrifying, actually. Now that I think about it, it's very scary.
Yeah, just a big drunk Russian man hanging out in the sun, just slowly blinking at people.
Okay, walk faster. I think we saw the black cat. Maybe that's where the myth comes from. If a black cat crosses your path, you have bad luck.
Just a fat Russian man.
Black cat man of the village may accidentally pee all over your shoes.
No, he's just marking. He's just marking his territories. It's fine.
So the police, of course, the police were never idle. They never stopped searching for the guy, but unfortunately, they were very bad at what they did.
Drunk.
That was one of the reasons why men hated Andre, because Andre didn't drink. He refused to have a drink with him, and in Russian society, if a man didn't have a drink with you, you couldn't trust him.
And this is the only good thing about the Russians. Never trust a man you can't have a beer with.
It's the direct opposite. That's why he stuck out of crowds. They even said that over and over again. The reason why he wasn't like everybody else is because he wasn't drunk and harassing people all the time.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the weird thing about him is that he always wanted to be normal. His whole thing was a search for normalcy, because he didn't drink, because he was impotent and all that. All the killing, it was a search for normalcy that he did in the most abnormal way possible.
Because it was a sense of inadequacy, because everybody had their thing. Everybody, like, either had, you know, they had a wife and a family, or they were doing something. They were good at something. The men were all boastful around him. They all could do something, and he could do nothing.
Yeah, they could slam a full liter of vodka and still get a boner. That's a physical feat. That's a physical Russian feat. That was in the Russian Olympics, but they didn't film it. How much can you drink and still get a boner?
Boner competition.
Mm-hmm.
So in the early days of Chikatilo's killing, he wasn't up to surgeon levels in the early days. He was still pretty hack and slash.
Can we just say he never got to surgeon levels?
Okay, well, we could say...
At this point, he was more like an Old West barber. Detroit street surgeon until later on. All right.
So because the killings were so horrific, the police got it in their head that the killer had to be...
A black cat.
Mentally handicapped.
Handicapped.
Yeah. So they pulled in their first suspects, these two guys, Kalinick and Shuburov. They were residents of a special hostel for the handicapped, and they were arrested for trying to steal a car.
And that is Russian for boo-boo and dinky.
Right.
Boo-boo and dinky. Real names in American, they'd be called boo-boo and dinky, and everybody loved them except, you know, I mean, they just had a problem with looking for uteruses.
Man, that just reminded me of Bobo and the other guy from that great movie, Nothing But Trouble.
Oh, man.
Remember that?
Oh, man, I can never remember the other one.
Bobo and
Little Devil.
Little Devil. Yep.
Yeah, glad we got that all cleared up.
Thank God.
So both men, of course, they were. And the book that I did the majority of my research from is called The Red Ripper. It's a fantastic fucking book. And it also has a lot to say about like Soviet Russia at the time. It's really good. But the guy kept using this term that I love. He kept saying mentally subnormal.
It's so much more insulting than saying retarded. It
is. And in Russia, you just get the feeling they're like, I want to vote. And they're like, mentally subnormal. Absolutely not. But it's interesting. One thing that stretches the entire globe is a police officer's ability to go for the simplest answer immediately.
Yep.
They always just go for the dumbest or the people that are just the simplest to arrest.
Yeah. And they, of course, I mean, they got confessions out of these guys.
Of course
guys.
They did, because they offered him one, like, they had a picture of a starburst. And they were like, yeah, look at that. You can get that in America. And they're like, oh, okay, I'll tell you everything.
Yeah, they told them that jail was like a fun spinny ride. And they're like, me like spin.
Right.
But the policeman said that they weren't intelligent enough to make up a story that fit the facts so neatly, because they did identify with detail the places where the victims' bodies were found and how they'd kill them. But, I mean, we all know how coerced confessions work.
Totally.
Especially when you're working in Soviet fucking Russia.
Right.
You know, when you've got the, you know, these police officers that are really trying to close this case.
And it hasn't changed that much. Watch World's Toughest Prisons, Russia. That is very intense. And
very quick sidebar that I read the other day. In Russia, the life expectancy of a prisoner is higher than that of a regular citizen.
Isn't that something? And I also heard in Russia, the meat does, you don't eat the meat, the meat eats you.
Wait a second, is that Yakov Smirnov?
Yeah, I've changed.
But it's true, though, what they talk about in Russian criminal justice, it's like 60% of confessions are coerced.
Right.
And they rely on the confession.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a Russian police must get the confession. It goes back, like, culturally to, like, the book Crime and Punishment, where they talk about how important it is, because it's a symbol of admission of guilt, and they need it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll do anything to get a confession. I mean, and Russians are not really known for their, like, delicacy.
No, they are not a delicate bunch whatsoever.
I mean, even in when they finally caught Andre, and they caught him with, you know, a big bag full of knives and ropes, and there was plenty of eyewitnesses, but until they got the confession, they were like, I don't know if I can keep this guy arrested. Like,
right.
They have 10 days. They can hold someone 10 days before they
and he's
finally
just
have
like,
to let him go.
You like my knife and rope collection? It is from IKEA.
Yeah, the Russian IKEA. That's where it all started, I think.
So, of course, these two guys went away for a while. And then, of course, the killings didn't stop. So what did they do? They went back to the same hostel and arrested two more mentally subnormal men named Ryabkin and Ponomarev.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the killings continue. On January 10th, they found a 17-year-old girl named Natalia Shalapini, and she was found covered in stab wounds. Her nose and upper lip was cut off, along with one of the fingers on her left hand.
You know what? It seems to me like we've got some Joker-like mischief going on. Maybe these subnormal humans, they were causing it all from jail. They were planning this whole thing.
So you're saying there was a council of retarded people.
Mentally subnormal.
The worst part of Russia. And they organized a conspiracy to kill little girls.
That's right, because they were scared of the Chikatilo rise. Sober in society. Looking for power.
But, you know, thankfully they did let none of these guys were charged. Unlike the man who was charged and murdered for Chikatilo's first murder, these guys were all let go. Eventually the police bundled 23 of the murders together after they realized, like, okay, these retards are in jail and these killings are still happening.
Mentally subhuman.
Subnormal. Mentally subhuman is the worst thing we could say.
That's the bad one. Yeah, that's the worst one.
Yeah, that's the one, like, that's the eugenics term.
Right, right. When you said bundled, I just pictured Flo from that progressive big commercial there. Oh, let's bundle them.
What's weird is that with all of these murders, I visualize Flo from the progressive commercial.
Oh, man. Take her into the woods.
So in 1984, in March, Dima Potoshnikov, 10-year-old boy, he went missing. Gifted child, loved stamp collecting, archaeology, poetry. Chikatilo stabbed him 54 times. And this is when the first clue comes along. They found very small clue, but they found a partial footprint from a large man around the body. And an eyewitness said that she saw a man from behind walking with the boy. And she said he was between like 50 and 55 years old. So this is the first description that they have of Chikatilo in regards to
this.
But
this is murders. Also, we're going, he has been, because he's already been caught two times molesting kids. He has been almost caught like nine times. I mean, again, every single time he's almost caught, it's he just checks out because he's a good member of the party.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this was his 20th murder, by the way. Sort of, and this was after his 20th murder. This was the most evidence the police had had. This is the first evidence the police had had against him.
Just an elderly man holding the hand of a child. It reminds me of that footprints in the sand. Remember that?
that Jesus poem.
It was then that I carried you.
It was then, but I murdered
Jesus
you.
Poem, does he take you to a remote location and cut out your uterus and chew on it? I'm not sure, because I never get to the end of it, because I fall asleep.
Yeah, something like that happens at the end. Yeah, we actually don't know.
So in May of 1984, this is a little incident I like to call Andre's Big Day Out.
Yeah, I noticed that you labeled it that.
So, I just imagine this whole thing taking place in a montage to the song from Hot Shots when they're having sex in the bed.
Oh, yeah, with the eggs and the bacon. Oh, that was the hottest sex he never recorded on camera. Oh,
it was great.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So in 84, Andre ran into a former quote-unquote lover of his at a bus station in Shakti, and she was also of subnormal intelligence, and they had met at a food cart where Tanya worked in 1978 prior to Andre's first kill. So you're saying
their first date was him, his first date with her was Andre met a retarded woman named Tanya at a taco truck. Yeah. And that was how they fell in love. That was their love story.
Yeah, because she said he was comparatively.
Russian is so romantic.
It is. It's like that first pitch movie with whatever that woman is.
She said he was comparatively charming. Meaning,
if you're not even like a fucking Don Juan to retarded woman, like how are you to a normal person?
Yeah, compared to all the rest of the men she dealt with in the bus station at the food cart day after day,
right?
Chikatilo was charming. Of course, they both started meeting in Andre's sex shack.
So he's like the most attractive guy in Alabama,
pretty much.
Yes. All right.
Yeah, pretty much. So, and of course, he was, you know, unable to get hard for her, and she got bored and moved on.
She used to it? I mean, it just seems... I haven't seen a picture of Tanya, but something tells me in my mind, Tanya may be a square-shaped woman.
She's a of subnormal intelligence. I actually think Chikatilo not getting hard for her is the right thing to do.
So 6 years later, Chikatilo runs into her again at the same station. Of course, he's killed 20 people at this point. So he invites...
So what have you been up to, Andre?
So Andre invites Tanya and her 11-year-old daughter, Sveta, out to a picnic. So Chikatilo had already selected the perfect spot for the kill. It was a dense, impenetrable fat patch of forest along a railway line. And the railway line was called Sadi, which means gardens in Russia. And the woman was drunk before Andre even picked her up.
I like her.
So is this on one of those plenty of fish, like profile, like breakdowns? Of the of relationships at work, you know.
Well, let's see.
Like, how about we meet at this place called an impenetrable forest lane? Yeah. And be drunk when I get you.
Don't forget.
So after 10 minutes walking from the station, Andre gets Tanya to lie down for some sex time. And the child, the kid gets the message, wanders off with the new doll that Andre had brought for her.
Which is actually nice to do to a child if you're going to defile her mother. Get her a doll.
So the two got naked. Andre went down on her for a while.
That's the most disgusting thing yet.
Just can't even handle this. It's just a daughter with the fucking dirty Russian doll staring at a retarded mother getting gone down on by this like 6-year-old man.
Yeah, it's probably just an old piece of sausage rubbed in some dirt. That's her doll.
Hey, Mama, how did you and Daddy meet?
Well, first he picked me up at a taco truck, then I got real drunk and he ate me out next to a fucking bramble bush.
You remember, you were there. God. Damn.
So after he goes down on her for a while, he can't get hard. And of course, she gives him a little bit of a jab. She says, "Call yourself a real man," which was a very fatal mistake. Mm-hmm. He reached into his bag, pulled out a long, sharp kitchen knife, and plunged it into the side of her head.
Of now, this makes it sort of like that Steve Martin funny arrow hat.
Ah, yeah, it does.
Yeah. So she just kept screaming and screaming. She wouldn't stop. So he dropped the knife, picked up the hammer that he'd had in the bag, and then just starts beating her face.
Right.
And of course, the little girl hears her mother scream. So
those are not the normal screams. These are new types of screams.
And so the little girl runs back to where she left Andre and her mother. And when she gets there, the first thing she sees is a naked Andre Chikatilo, stark naked, covered in blood, running towards her through the forest with a knife in his hand. He catches up to her. He takes her down with the knife. He gets the hammer. He fucking smashes her over the head. And her head, when they found her body, her head was 5 yards away, completely severed.
Good God.
Another thing, too, is like about these details come from Andre himself.
Yes.
Right. And when he's giving the confession later on, he loves these details, and he gives them everything. When we'll talk about it soon, but that whole confession, he gave it all to them, because by then he was like, because it's true, because it was time for him. This is his highlight reel.
Right.
This is him returning the kickoff for 99 yards.
Right.
Him covered in blood, scream, run, cutting a little girl's head off. You know what I mean? Like, that's... It was a big get for him.
Yeah. This is a real big one. I mean, there's one that he has later on that's, you know, I would say a little more artistic. But this one is definitely running back the ball.
Artistic, Marcus?
Well, we'll get to it.
All right.
Yeah, you'll see. It's very, very disturbing.
All right.
So in 1984, that was the most intense period of killing in his entire career.
I just want to go back. That's what you called Andre's big day out.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just to clarify, everybody. So when I'm reading these,
Andre,
him pouring, you know, like fizzy champagne into a wine glass for her, and she like winking at him, and then him giving the doll and like taking the little girl and putting her in her trash can, covering the top of it so she can't see.
What a big day out it was.
So in August and September of 1984, 10 people fell to Andre's knife, more than one a week for 2 months. And even more boldly, he was killing people who would be missed. He wasn't just killing prostitutes. He was killing children. And really, this is the traditional berserker period of the serial killer in which they get caught. I mean,
flagrant. He's killing people that, like, he's not being careful.
Mm-hmm.
He's killing people all over the place. He believes that he's invisible to the police, and it was almost like he was.
In Russia, you are invisible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. And this is, you know, we look at Bundy, we look at Dahmer. All these guys got caught because they lost control. Andre's losing...
Of course, the great Bundy, one of my favorite Bundy quotes, if you can have a favorite Bundy quote where you forget where you put the wrench, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So on September 13th, 1984, the police have figured out that this killer is operating out of train stations. So they're doing a lot of stakeouts. So an undercover detective, he sees Chikatilo trying to lure a young woman away from a bus station. They arrested him. They looked at his belongings. They found a knife and a rope. They started going into his background, and they saw that he had all these molestation accusations against him.
Mm-hmm.
His physical description matched that of the witness earlier, and his, you know, foot size was around the same as the footprint that they had. But, and this is fucked up, the reason why they let him go is because Andre Chikatilo has a 1 in a million genetic condition in which his blood type and his sperm type are different. So they took his blood, because they had, of course, sperm, because he ejaculated in his pants quite a bit. They had his sperm.
Oh, you need sperm? Because you could just scrape my pockets. I mean, bro, that's like what I do, man. I'm like a little sperm bank. If you look at the fly on my pants, it's like a sperm apartment building, dude.
So they had sperm samples, and the sperm sample was AB, but they took Andre's blood, and his blood type is A. Most of us, our blood type and our sperm type are the same.
Sure.
But Andre, 1 in a million chance. So since the blood and the sperm didn't match up, They let him go
from the rail, from the railway station.
Yeah, I
love, and again, a slightly weird way that it made him the perfect killer.
Right,
like it's this thing of like that's just an added thing that added to his invisibility. And we're gonna see this too when we cover things like Luis Garavito, the his South American serial killer who killed over like next to 300 little kids. This he can operate anonymously.
Yeah, I thought so. He hangs out at train stations a lot.
All the time. Yeah. That's what he loves doing. That's his thing.
And it's just a huge sprawl. And Russia is massive. There's next to no communication between areas of Russia. Mm. They are like it's so huge and it's so poor that he can just operate under the radar. Yeah.
Malcolm McDowell he did a good Chikatilo, but I really loved Tom Hanks's Chikatilo in the Polar Express. That's hot stuff.
Also, most of Malcolm McDowell's acting job was to just comb his hair forward. He just has a bowl cut.
So at this point, Chikatilo, he's killed well over 30 people, but the public, the only knowledge they have is that of rumor, because the state had a hard clampdown on the entire media, and not only that, but the media themselves, they self-censored. You know, like they already knew what they weren't allowed to do, so they self-censored absolutely everything.
And if you're in America, this is a dream story. This is everywhere. Chikatilo would be up there with Manson.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. But because, you know, so people didn't know, don't stay out late at night. You know,
well, it's because
keep extra watch on your
kids.
They
cannot rock the boat. They can't. Yeah. They can't let something like this would show that the communist system doesn't work. That it doesn't fix your personality to be like one of a gigantic group.
Yeah, and his wife, she had no idea what was going on this entire time.
I'm gonna blame that on her not communicating. You know,
well, she tried sending him to a therapist. She actually did. Yeah. Because of his sex problems, she tried sending him to a therapist. We have no record, of course, of the visit, but it seems through Andre's testimony that all he did was just give him a bunch of tranquilizers and said, go on your way.
That's a great therapist.
And tell him, like, it's totally cool to come in your pants, dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, you come in your pants. You can do that. It's fine.
And so Andre, after he killed, he'd wait a few days before he would go back home because he was, if nothing else, patient.
Yeah.
He was patient. And during his berserker period, it's possible that he didn't get caught because he didn't go full on berserker like Bundy did, breaking into a sorority house and just beating women with a log. He still had the exact same MO. He still, like, if someone didn't go with him, if someone showed any resistance, he still would move on to the next person. But he was just doing it every day.
Right.
Or every week.
It's like a door-to-door vacuum salesman.
Yeah.
You know, not everyone's going to buy, but sometimes, sometimes they will.
You know what? It is exactly like that.
So at work, of course, things were not going well. Andre was not the most popular of employees, and he spent most of his time writing letters of complaint about his coworkers to their superiors and the local Communist
Party.
This
guy would have crushed Yelp.
Oh,
he would have been all over the Yelp.
And then his job was to go and make sure people delivered shipments of various industrial things.
Yeah.
Like he would go to, like, because basically people would make promises to make X number of supplies or X number of raw materials, and then they just wouldn't deliver. They would get the money and just not deliver. So his job was to go and make sure they did.
Yeah, because in Soviet Russia, how it worked is, like, you would make the screws in Moscow, and then you would make the bolts in Rostov, and so on and so forth.
They did it wrong.
They did it very wrong, but that was part of their strategy. They thought they were doing it right, but they made all of the materials to build one thing in a million different places around the country.
Right.
So Chikatilo, he went out. His job was to go, at this point, it was in 1984, his job was to go from Rostov to Moscow to pick up some linoleum. but when he came back and the bookkeeper checked in the order, she found that there were 70 pounds of linoleum missing.
Not good.
And since nobody liked Andre, and usually a lot of people turn the blind eye because theft was expected in the Soviet system.
Right.
That was just built into it. But since nobody liked Andre, he was arrested and sentenced to a year in jail.
That's how he got arrested.
Right. It wasn't
for missing linoleum.
The great linoleum thief of 1984.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it wasn't the fucking molestation. It wasn't the murders. It was missing 70 missing pounds of linoleum that put Andre Chikatilo in jail for the first time. And he only did time served. He did 3 months. But of course, once he came out, he waited a further 6 months before killing again. And during his trial, this is what trial psychiatrists pointed to say that he was absolutely sane, because he was obviously in control of his facilities for six months.
What is very interesting too is that, like, I feel like even after just 3 months in a Russian prison, don't you not want to go back?
I think that's why he took the break, though, probably, right?
Yeah, he took the break. But on the other hand,
especially if you have all that beautiful linoleum flooring at your house, you just want to get back there, just hang out on it. It's such a nice flooring.
First victim out of prison, he stabbed her 38 times before strangling her. And at this point, the police did have a fairly accurate description of him. It was age 25 to 55, tall, well-developed physically, blood group AB, shoe size 40.
Breast size 30. Shaq or something?
Yeah.
Shoe size 43.
Breast size 34C. He's still a Baba after all.
Carries an attaché with sharp knives, possibly suffers from impotence, knowledge of human anatomy, picks up victims at bus stations and railway stations, and his job allows him to move freely across the country, which we look at in hindsight as, yes, of course, that's Andre Chikatilo. But if police would have brought in everybody who had that description, they would have ended up with thousands of men in that area and across Russia.
Right.
And, of course, if they brought him in, the different blood type and sperm type would have immediately eliminated him.
Difficult
what
to find
What I do like
him.
Is here is that, like, but what is interesting is how, like, just the gigantic search for him would lead to all these covering-ups of a bunch of these other crimes. Like, they would solve a bunch of other murders and rapes and, I guess, cases of homosexuality.
Yeah
that was horrible.
The strange thing, yeah, being gay. I guess it's still illegal in Russia.
Still illegal, yeah. It's still a thing. But back in those days, it was even more illegal. Yeah, in their search for Chikatilo, they cleared up 1,062 crimes, including 95 murders, 245 rapes, 100 cases of serious bodily harm, and 105 cases of homosexuality.
So was Chikatilo one of their better? Was Chikatilo one of their better detectives?
Technically, and also most of those cases for homosexuality were just like busting up places that made burlesque costumes.
Right.
Which is upsetting.
So he's out of prison. He's got a fresh start, and he's got a new job. And the new job is a lot like his old job. He still had freedom to roam across the country. But, of course, his employees at his new job hated him as well. They said he was cold, distant, and always complaining. His colleagues said they never heard him laugh, but when he smiled, it reminded them of a crocodile. And if you look at pictures of Chikatilo smiling at his trial, yeah, that's a fucking crocodile.
I mean, he's got more of a snarl.
Yeah.
And also, his colleagues never heard him laugh, but when he smiled to remind him of a crocodile is like a great about me.
Yeah.
On like a dating website.
Maybe
I don't laugh, but when I smile, coworkers say I'm crocodile.
But again, I mean, crocodile, but also sometimes snapping turtle. I don't know. I'm just looking for love, trying to make connections.
I think his coworkers were just drunk and they weren't very funny. They were all laughing because they're, you know, blasted off of vodka.
So by 1987, he committed 3 more murders across the Soviet Union. And this is a little slip up on his part. All of his business trips were recorded by his employers. So when investigators started investigating Chikatilo, they were able to look at the records of his business trips and cross-reference them with records of murders across the country, which was one of the big things that also helped sink him.
Coincidence.
Yep. In 1988, he killed an additional 3. Objects of attention in the killings pretty much remain the same as tongues, nipples, genitals. But by the late 80s, much more precise. Like I said earlier, he could avoid spurts as he stabbed and slashed.
So it's kind of like he became like a Hope Solo, right? Just kind of like dodging like the slaloms.
And you talk about this is really fuck. I mean, this really does show you how easy his job was. A psychiatrist in Rostov. Of course, children were going missing, but he did a test in Rostov where he would drive around in his car and he'd ask children to get into his car.
Right.
Like, hey, you want a ride? Come on, get in the car. And he said, and a quote, alarming amount of children would, without fear, climb into the passenger seat.
See, I don't know.
Of the that car to an unknown location.
It sounds like
that
they just kind of
like
annoyed him.
Pete Townsend doing research argument. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But that does tell you how easy it was for kids to just, you know, trust an older man.
Yeah. I mean, at some point,
that's the person I least trust is an older man.
We know that now, but back then, you know, that was the guy you trusted.
So on January 11th, 1989, he lured Tatiana Raiskova, 16 to a vacant apartment. He stabbed her in the mouth and strangled her. And this was the only time that he killed inside. Every other murder was out in the woods, so he could just leave the body there. But in this case, he had to dispose of it. So he hacked the body into pieces, cut off her head, both of her legs, wrapped all the body parts in her clothes, put the bundle down in the cellar while he cleaned up the apartment upstairs.
Right.
After he mopped it all up, he took a sled from out in front of the building and drug the body to a railroad crossing. Of course, the sled came stuck, and in just classic serial killer fashion, along comes a friendly stranger to help him unstick it, and is like, "Oh my God, this is heavy." And like,
yeah, there's a girl in it.
That is funny. You know, you smile, it looks like a crocodile.
It's so funny because also people sometimes say snapping turtle. Do you want to be friend?
So after the man left, Andre stuffed the bundle into some large pipes, and the remains were found 9 days later.
Okay.
There's so many body-shaped pipes in Russia.
Yeah.
So after they after investigators found this body, they knew for a fact that it was the railways. Everything. Yeah. The railways were the key to this entire operation. So the Russian police began a stakeout. As many as 600 plainclothes officers were on the case at one time. Some of them had to lie in pits that they dug along the side of the road and cover them up with branches and leaves.
No one will notice you. No one's gonna. Everyone's gonna
just
think
like
you're a bush.
A big hat with leaves on it and stuff. Being like, I am three. No one look at cop. The rest is three.
And there were also police women decked out in short skirts and heavy makeup. And Chikatilo never even came close. Because
they looked ridiculous.
Yeah, he knew. So if police were concentrated on Rostov, he would move to the town of Novocherkassk. And it was discovered that he was killing there. And the police would move some to Novocherkassk. That would weaken Rostov. So he would move to a third city. He would go to Shakhty. And then once the investigation went there, he would go back to Rostov. So it was just this big shell game.
It's kind of funny if you play that Benny Hill music behind it.
It seems like that there's a term for this type of investigation, which is it's some sort of trap where there's the idea is to like kind of smoke them out.
I was just going
to
say it reminds me of the Australian serial killer episode when they put the shotgun in the bush and they just tied the string to it.
Yeah. 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 And that didn't work either.
No.
So that summer, Chikatilo killed four more times. Three of them were little boys. He killed a 10-year-old boy named Alosha Kobatov. And, of course, Alosha was fascinated with horror movies. It was around this time that, the Soviet Union started becoming a little bit more open. You had this was during the period of Glasnost. In which things were starting to open up in the Soviet Union. And so horror movies were coming to town, and they used to show him at these places called video salons. And
they would. I just feel like in Russia they would watch horror movies, and they would just be like, well, this is very funny comedy, but where is the horror?
Yeah.
Of course, Chikatilo picked him up on the corner of Karl Marx Street and Soviet Street on August 28th. He approached the boy, started having a conversation, and he said,
I can show you some great horror films if you like. I've got a big collection in my cottage. Why don't you come with me and take a look?
Which is also how I make friends. Which makes me sad.
Yeah, let's go back to that's how we all made friends, really. Yeah. It's like, hey, come over to my place. We'll watch a horror movie. We'll gauge each other's reactions. And then when we both see that we both feel nothing, then we become friends.
Perfect.
So this is the one that I'm talking about that was a little, artful may not be the right word. Mm-hmm. But he definitely gave this kid the full horror movie experience. So a couple of years.
Oh, yeah, this is the thing. Yeah, this is definitely the, do you want to see something really scary?
Right.
And then like,
it's like that movie Last Action Hero, where the kid gets sucked into an action movie, but this kid gets sucked into a really bad.
This seems film. Yeah, he gets sucked into a terrible horror film. So they start walking back to Chikatilo's house, and Chikatilo says, hey, why don't we take a shortcut through this graveyard? Cool. Chikatilo, years earlier...
Yeah, again, if I was to meet with somebody that wanted to go see horror films, I would literally do the same thing, where it's like, do you want to come with me through this graveyard? And people, it would be like, cool, yeah, cool.
Definitely.
So he took the kid into the graveyard, and a few years earlier, Chikatilo had contemplated suicide, you know, fairly hard. He'd even dug a grave for himself at this graveyard, and this was years before.
Which just seems like that's the hardest thing to do first.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, I guess it gives you time to think.
Yeah. You know what? I rarely say this about suicide, but sometimes do it. You know, Chikatilo.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah. So he had already dug a grave for himself. This was years before. He shows up, and he gets this bright idea, like, hey, let's have fun with this kid in this grave. And so he takes the kid there, and not only is the hole still dug, but the shovel he had used to dig it was still propped up against the tree next to the hole. So he jumps on the little boy. He hits him over the head. He bites off his tongue. He cuts off his genitals. Throws the body in, and as he's chewing the genitals, he buries the boy.
Was the boy alive still, or do we know?
I believe the boy was dead when he threw him in. And it wasn't until Chikatilo's arrest that the body was actually found, and by then it was no more than a skeleton, because, of course, no one noticed the freshly dug grave in the graveyard.
I can just imagine him just going like, well, now you enjoy yourself, because this is an especially comfortable grave, because I built it for myself.
Right, yeah.
So in 1990, Chikatilo killed 8, which of course was his deadliest year since 1984. And of course, in reaction to this, and
he really was a bottomless killer.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's kind of crazy. It just never stopped for him.
Yeah,
like, he didn't have any significant cooling off periods at all.
No. And the only one was between his first murder and his second murder. There were, I think, 3 or 4 years between the first one and the second one. But that's the only one that he really, that's the only characteristic he shares with a lot of other killers. The one thing about Andre that he doesn't share with other killers is that he shows no sign of ever wanting to be caught.
Right.
No. Once he is caught, he has an urge to confess, but he never shows any sign of wanting to be caught. There's never a stop me before I kill again.
Right. Right.
So in 1990, it was he killed 8. That was his deadliest year since 1984. And of course, in reaction to this, and witnesses reporting a middle-aged man in the company of young boys, a lot of those were coming around, or a lot of the witnesses were coming forward. Soviet police organized a massive stakeout in major stations in Rostov, and this was their first smart move. Actually, they organized a big police presence, like a very obvious police presence in the major stations in Rostov, but they placed undercover agents at the smaller ones because they thought if they flushed them over to the smaller ones, then, and it was...
It'd be easier to see who was doing it. And it technically did work, but not completely.
Yeah, it did work, but due to the incompetence of the Soviet police, it did not work. On November 6, 1990, Chikatilo killed and mutilated a 22-year-old woman named Svetlana Korostik in the woodlands near a station called Donzlakach. And while leaving the crime scene, as he came out of the woods, covered in leaves and grass stains and dirt, a policeman saw Chikatilo approach a well and start washing his hands and face. He had...
Which was like literally just a well that had a sign that was like, 4 murderers.
Yep.
And he had a red smear on his face. His finger was bandaged. There was a cut on his hand. And the officer, of course, he looked a little suspicious, but he thought... That, you know, a popular pastime in Russia, which we talked about before, is gathering wild mushrooms. People love gathering wild mushrooms.
They were video games. So that's a problem.
But, of course, but Chikatilo, he wasn't dressed like a forest scavenger. He was dressed like a normal dude. Like, he had on his, you know, his jacket and his tie.
Right.
And he had a nylon sports bag, which you couldn't really... That's not good for carrying mushrooms.
Is it possible the police officer thought he was another undercover police officer playing the bush? Was he on bush duty?
Wait, are you on bush duty, bro? Yeah. You're on kill little girl duty. Crazy.
Duh. So the policeman stopped Chikatilo, checked his papers, but he had no real reason to arrest him. So he let Chikatilo go. Went back to the office, filed a report, and then put it among a card catalog that Now, this is insane. This can also, this tells you a lot about Soviet Russia, and this also tells you how Chikatilo got lost in the shuffle. Mm-hmm. They had a card catalog of all the suspects that was 500,000 names long, it was all written by hand.
Do they have that Dewey Decimal system? I feel like that would come in handy here.
Yeah. No, they had no, yeah, they had no real organizational, records. Like, it was pretty hodgepodge. And so they found the body of the woman that Chikatilo had killed that night on November 13th. She was the 36th known victim linked to the manhunt. So as far as the police were concerned, there were 36 victims of the serial killer, but they didn't know that there was actually about 14 more than that that they still had no idea about.
So at this point, they weren't taking him seriously yet. You know,
no,
just
no.
a 36. I mean, who cares?
That's it. Yeah, they were like, 36. Once he gets up to like 70, then we'll really start putting heat on him. You know what I mean? Because at this point, it's just helping us conserve as much. We only have so many buckets of soup for everybody.
Right.
So the more the people that are gone, the better.
So police, of course, they looked over all of the people that had been stopped over the last week, and they found the report that the police officer at the station had filed, and they saw the name Andrei Chikatilo. But Andrei Chikatilo had showed up more than other names. He'd showed up a few times. He'd showed up way back in 1978 with that first murder. He showed up in 1982 with that spate of eight there, and they had actually brought him in, and that was when they took the test that cleared him at the time.
And everybody hated him. Nobody liked him. Anytime they talked to anybody about him, they're like, yeah, he's probably a boy killer. I'm not really sure, but I mean, as far as I know, at least he doesn't drink vodka.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, doesn't drink vodka?
There was one woman that worked with him said that she looked over his shoulder in his workbook. He was writing in his workbook, and he was just sitting there drawing crosses, like little tiny crosses.
Well, that is artistic.
Yeah,
that's fine. It's like drawing the little weird graffiti S's, like the chain link S's.
Yeah, oh, I love those.
I would be more concerned if it was that.
Yeah.
So police put Chikatilo under surveillance, and you know, they saw him approach lots of young women and children, and of course the woman or child would break off. Chikatilo would wait a few minutes and then seek another conversation partner, and so finally after 6 days they hadn't seen him do anything, and Chikatilo apparently didn't know that he was being followed. He left his house on November 20th with a large jar that he had filled with beer, of course ostensibly to go find a hooker and say, hey, let's go relax.
Just a hot jar of Russian beer.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Disgusting to me.
And as he exited a cafe, four plainclothes officers walked up to him and arrested him, and he made no attempt to resist.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then it's just like, all right, let's just do this.
Yeah.
Let's get this going.
Yeah.
Come on.
And so he, after 10 days of interrogation, he finally began to confess to the murders. The reason why they had kept him, despite the discrepancies in the blood and the semen type, was because a couple of years before, there had been a Japanese report out that said that it is possible for someone to have a different blood and a different sperm type. It's a one in a million thing. But that wasn't something that was discovered until, you know, relatively recently. Around like the 90s.
So it was really, he was just acting like a Times Square Elmo. You're just going around and harassing random people and they would branch off.
Yeah.
And pretty much, yeah. And God, the video of the confessions. Because basically, it's him in a room, a hot room of all shirtless Russian men screaming at each other. And then it cuts to him with like dolls of little boys. And it's just like, you know, because it's voiceover on the documentary, but it's just him just going like, I stubbed her and I stubbed her. And then like, chew. And then him going like, like chewing near the genitals and chewing near the nipples and stuff. And like,
he was very animated.
Very animated. Yeah. But my first thought, it was just like, God, that room must smell disgusting. Mm-hmm. 10 drunk, vodka soaked, cigarette, just fucking body waste.
Yeah, if an NFL team drank vodka on the sidelines instead of Gatorade, just imagine what that locker room would smell like.
Well, speaking of the crowd, the trial of Andrei Chikatilo was populated by a typical Russian crowd, or at least the book that I read said it was a typical Russian crowd. He described them as, quote, aggressive and ill-tempered.
Oh, all right.
They also put him in a gigantic metal cage to protect him
from the people. But meanwhile, like, when you see video of the trial, it's him just sitting on a stool, like, literally going like, like, snarling at people and shit.
Well, that was his one chance to get the nickname.
He was a ghoulish-looking fuck, too, because he shaved his head. Some people say that he shaved his head because the police were looking for lice. Other people say that he requested to have his own hair shaved. And so this Greg, because if you look at his mugshots, I mean, he definitely looks creepy, but he also does look like Russian grandfather.
Right. Yes, he does. He just got bad hair. He's got that wispy, weird, like, gray hair, and he's got that, like, deep, like, I don't know what it is. It's a communist stubble that he has.
But he shaved his head for the trial, and he looked like an absolute monster. Yeah. Everyone's seen pictures of Chikatilo's trial. And why is he wearing a Hawaiian shirt most of the
time? I don't know.
He was cutting loose. He was having, like, fun.
One must have a hint of color. Yeah. Have you seen The Birdcage? That's a funny movie. Anyway, I chewed nipples off because it's fun to chew. I love how springy they are.
It is a funny movie.
It took 9 hours to read the charges against Chikatilo. And on the first day of the trial, I don't know where he got it from, but he brought a porno mag out of his pocket and waved it in the air. Yeah. He would constantly interrupt the proceedings with shouts. In fact, one day, after a particularly noisy standoff with the judge, Andre took off all of his clothes, waved his soft penis at the court, and he said, "Look at this useless thing! What do you think I could do with that?"
So he's using his small dick defense.
Yeah.
I see. The flaccid penis defense. That's perfect.
It's very interesting, like, because they really let him express a lot during this trial, because there's also a theory that that's why he was trying to do this activity to bump up, like, being considered insane.
Right.
Yeah. And also just prolong the amount of time between, you know, his trial and his soon-to-come death.
Right. I mean, that's him at his most comfortable. And, you know, they still put people in those behind the cell walls today, or behind the,
The cages.
The cages today. But that's probably the most comfortable he's been all day.
Yeah.
And all week.
Yes.
You know? Oh, yeah. So on October 15th, Chikatilo was found guilty of 52 of the 53 murders and sentenced to death for
each
offense.
Which one got away from him? What poor family didn't have justice at the Chikatilo trial?
Oh, man.
With the only kid... That's unbelievable.
He was also found guilty on 5 counts of sexual assault committed during the years he worked as a teacher in the 70s, so they brought those charges
back.
That's
nice.
That's nice.
I'm just fascinated by this jury. Was it a jury trial?
No, in Russia you don't have trial by juries.
So it was just a judge.
It's just a judge.
How didn't the judge have enough evidence for 53 out of 53?
But he's got two members of the public that sit next to the judge.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, they have. It's weird, but it's like it's just 3 people.
Yeah,
I think that's the way
Destiny's
they do it.
It's a child system.
Beyonce is the judge.
Yeah, and Chikatilo, just like Ted Bundy, screaming, "Tell them they're wrong." Yeah. As soon as Chikatilo heard the verdict, he kicked his bench across the cage and just started shouting shit. And the whole time that he kept. Back in, I think, like, 88, his son had a garage built next to his apartment complex. And, of course, there was a lot of sewage involved. So Andre Chikatilo took that as his little pet project to rally against the Soviet system at the time. So the entire time during his arrest and his trial, he kept saying that he was being persecuted by the higher-ups in the Communist Party for protesting stinky toilets.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Which is just like, you know, you might as well just go to California and protest against palm trees. Because it seems like Russia is mostly stinky toilets.
Oh, yeah.
And when he was given an opportunity to make a speech, he said nothing. And
he did do a weird interpretive dance to 17, that song by Fleetwood Mac, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm.
And on Valentine's Day, 1994, Chikatilo was... No, it's romantic.
It is.
Hallmark made up the holiday. Don't get me started, but let's get back to Chikatilo.
So Chikatilo was taken from his death row cell to a soundproof room in Novocherkassk prison and was executed with a single gunshot behind the right ear.
These guys do this real fast.
Really
executions, like, it's just real. There is no discussion. They literally, it was like not that long after the fucking end of the trial.
No.
Like, they just take you in there and they just pop you in the back of the head. And it's
looks
done.
Like it was about 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Get it done. That's very interesting. All right. So,
no,
Chikatilo's
actually,
dead.
5 months. And as a bit of an epilogue to just show you how fucking brutally depressing and sad the Soviet Union is, Remember the guy that was executed for Andre's very first murder, wrongly executed? So after Andre's trial, after he was found guilty, prosecutors eventually tracked down the mother of the wrongfully convicted because they wanted to apologize to her. And when she heard the news, she broke down and cried because she had not even known that her son had been executed in the first place.
Yikes. Yikes. Because it just seems like maybe he sent her a letter, and like because the post office is mostly run by like stray dogs with letters tied to them, that like she didn't get the letters until like a week ago.
Right. Well, this is why you don't apologize for anything, because maybe somebody doesn't even think you did something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was sending postcards from his vodka tasting trip that he was taking through Siberia.
I mean, this woman, as far as she knew, her son was just an asshole that hadn't talked to her in 20 years.
I guess it's a relief to know that he's dead.
Yeah, it's a relief to know that he was wrongfully executed for a crime he didn't commit.
God, that had to be awkward for those cops. Ma'am, I'm sorry. We have to let you know that your son was innocent of all the charges and we wrongfully executed him. You killed him?
You killed him?
What do you mean you killed him? Never mind, we didn't. He's still alive. He's doing great.
So the birthday party's over. So we can't do the birthday party? Well, this is just, what an insane story.
Man.
You know, and again, it's just like, it's a perfect combination of psychosis and environment.
Mm-hmm.
He is a brutal fucking killer, probably one of the more brutal that we, like, America has a different, we have a flair.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Richard Ramirez has a fucking, what a great story.
Yeah.
Like, Andre Ciccatello is just the fucking, I don't know what it is. It's almost like entropy. It's like people just like disappearing into time, and that's just what he's a part of. He's like the brutal underside of the communism, of like what happened in early communism.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, he did parallel, his life paralleled the rise and fall of the Soviet state almost exactly. It's creepy. Yeah. Yeah, good. I'd say good point, Ragnar.
Yeah, good point, Ragnar. And let's not say Ramirez's story was that great.
I'm just saying it was interesting. It's a fun story. Just because he liked rock and roll.
Fun is also debatable.
I'm just saying, if Ciccatello, Ciccatello could have made it a little bit more entertaining by like dressing up as a raven or like being into like, you know, like really into any sort of like AC/DC, really getting into that sort of thing, like getting into Danzig real hard and wearing shirts and talking about how like he's the fucking channel of the devil.
He put on a great theatrical event though during his trial. So
he did try.
That fucking, you know what they call a soft penis in Russia? They call it a pink necktie.
I've heard that.
So he is in a great time.
I like to wear one of those. All right, let's see. We got the live show coming up this Saturday.
Yep, this Saturday. What's the exact date on that? I believe that is the 28th. Nope. That is the 27th.
All right.
This Saturday, September 27th at the Creek in the Cave, 10 p.m., 1093 Jackson Avenue in Long Island City. You can take the 7 train to get here. You can take the G train, the E train, all kinds of shit. But this month, we're going to have Holden McNeely of the Roundtable of Gentlemen sit in with us on stage.
Ah, yes. Making the show a little bit more unlistenable.
Well, I mean, it would be unwatchable.
Yes. Unwatchable.
I'm sure he's going to Holdenators hoe us and
all that. So come on out to that. I have a week at the Creek, October 12th through the 17th. So that's every Sunday through Friday at 7 p.m. starting that. And that's going to be really fun. We're going to do a bunch of things.
Want to remind everybody that it's 2 weeks away from our favorite month of the year, October, and we are not going to disappoint. We're looking for Chris. We're going to be doing a listener pasta episode. Mm-hmm. Please submit your scariest stories. Funniest. That's what's the problem with my fucking brain.
Right.
Was it like submit your scariest stories? We're going to be reading them on the air, and we are going to attempt to disgust you again this year.
That's right.
So. Just know that our Dark Lord and Master, Satan himself, we're doing it right for him. We're going to try to brutalize you.
October is going to be a fun month.
Yeah, it is.
Definitely. All right, everyone, let's do a Hail Satan. And
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Oh, it feels so good to say it. Everybody gets so weird when I say it to them out here.
I'm having one. All right. Hail yourselves, everybody.
Hail me.
Hail Gain.
Uh-oh.
In the Mokos Talaj.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you soon.
Goodbye.